podcast of People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On the show today, former People of Color commentator Brandon Kolke joins us from Youngstown, Ohio. Brandon and I will have a candid conversation about important issues of the day facing people of color in America. We talk about education, we talk about business, and we talk about racism and more. Please join me and my guest, Brandon Kolke, on this episode of People of Color with Henry Banks. Welcome to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you for joining us this evening. I am here with Brandon Kolke. He is a former commentator on the show and joins me by phone. He's in Youngstown, Ohio. Welcome to the show, Brandon.
I am in Youngstown. Thank you very much. It's good to be back with you.
So what's up over in Youngstown?
Well, life is certainly a lot slower than it was when we lived in Duluth. As many people know, I had my hands pretty much in everything at one point or another when I was up there. And when we decided to make the move back to Ohio, where I'm from and where my family is, it was a change. And part of that was to just kind of really focus on family. And I realized that without being on boards and being involved in four or five nonprofits at the same time, that I actually enjoy evenings at home now. So it was a good shift for us. Certainly there's a lot of things I miss about Duluth, but it was a good shift for us, and we're plugging along.
Well, why don't you refamiliarize, if you will, our listeners to some of the boards and commissions and activities you are a part of in Duluth. I know a lot of people listening right now will remember you, but kind of refamiliarize our listeners as to your work in the community here when you lived in the Twin Ports.
When I lived in the Twin Ports, the first real interaction I had with the community itself was with CHUM. I worked at CHUM for a number of years, both in the drop-in center and managed a family shelter for a while. And through working at CHUM, I became very active with other things. Of course, Steve O'Neill was just phenomenal during that time too, and certainly, you know, was a role model to say, hey, you know, get involved with your community and do something to help. And so through that, I ended up doing a number of things. I was on the Hillsider newspaper board for a number of years, chaired that. I was involved with Lifehouse and also was on that board for a while. And then things kind of shifted for me a little bit. I focused more on families. And as many people remember, hopefully, that I was the outreach coordinator for the Duluth Fathering Project for a number of years before I became the executive director. And, of course, one of your former colleagues recruited me for that, Deb Wright, or then
Absolutely.
Known as Deb Wright.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so she recruited me to go into that role. And so really my roles somewhat shifted over the years, but really they always focused on families. They focused on the well-being of families. And while some of those kind of faded in and out, before I left there, I was still running the Duluth Fathering Project, but I was also involved with the Duluth Edison Schools in regard to diversity education for both staff and students, because Bonnie Jorgensen, the principal then at Duluth Edison, recognized that there are people of color here, and we have a little bit of an issue, or I should say students of color here, because all of our teachers are white. And so how is that really kind of affecting the school? And because she was open-minded enough to see a lot of that, it actually turned into a program that I ended up managing with Duluth Edison before I moved here to Youngstown.
Interesting. So all of that and so much more, I'm sure, that you're not sharing with our listeners that you were a part of. Yeah. So that just gives us, a basis for our conversation today. But you mentioned Steve O'Neill. Steve O'Neill was a very dear friend of mine. He was a commissioner, St. Louis County commissioner. And I can tell you that whenever I needed to speak with the commissioner. He did not require me to set up an appointment. I could just go right into his office. That's the kind of person he was. And then his wife, Angie Miller, equally as wonderful as her late husband.
I agree, very much so.
So you're over in Youngstown, Ohio, and you're not very active politically and as an activist there. You chose not to be as active going back to your home state because you wanted to be home at the end of the evening with your family. That makes a lot of sense, and I understand that. With regard to Youngstown, Ohio, what is the population of the city? How does it compare to Duluth from the standpoint of ethnic demographics, et cetera?
Okay. Youngstown has about 82,000 people. So relatively, it's very similar population-wise to Duluth. The big difference here is, even before we got here, we looked at some of the demographic information, and only really because that was stuff that I was very in tune with in the Twin Ports area. And when we started looking at some of the demographic information, we realized that Youngstown was already a community that no longer had a 51% majority population of any race. And so that intrigued me because, of course, in Minnesota, we've always heard these numbers and these projections that within, you know, within the decade or so, that was going to happen in Minneapolis. That was going to happen in the bigger community, or could happen in the bigger communities up there. And so I was very fascinated by that. Well, then when I started looking at it a little bit more, I realized that according to the last census, and I'm sure some of it's changed since, that Youngstown was 47.2% Caucasian and 41.4% African-American. And that obviously immediately caught my attention because that was such a dramatic shift from Duluth.
So quite a bit different.
Right.
So how close are you to Cleveland or Cincinnati?
We are actually, for people who are kind of wondering where Youngstown is, we are geographically halfway between Cleveland and Pittsburgh. We are 58 miles from Cleveland. We're 62 miles from Pittsburgh. We are 4.5 hours from Cincinnati. My daughter is just finishing school there, so I've made that trip more than enough times. But so we're farther from Cincinnati, but geographically we are about an hour and 15 minutes away from Cleveland or Pittsburgh, depending on which way you go.
Okay, so really two large, very large cities nearby.
Yes. There's just a lot more people around here. My hometown, if people are familiar with northeastern Ohio, my hometown, Canton, is 45 minutes away from us, and Canton has a number of people, but from Canton to Akron to Cleveland, it's just all people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm here with Brandon Clokey. He is a former commentator on People of Color. He now resides in Youngstown, Ohio, about an hour and a half from Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, respectively. I want to talk to you a little bit about, you mentioned the percentages of population, Caucasian and African American, being very similar in size. How do these communities get along?
They have their issues, just like any other community. I wouldn't say that it's a whole rose-colored, you know, utopia. Because like any community, you're going to have issues. But here it is significantly different because people understand just based on numbers alone that you are going to have to figure out a way to get along. If you walk into the schools, you see Caucasian teachers, you see African-American teachers, you see Hispanic teachers, you see Turkish teachers. You see you see a very diverse staff. And they realize that, okay, we have to work together because this isn't about what we think someone else should be. This is about teaching our students. And the schools that my stepson has been associated with have managed to use that diversity to their advantage. And ultimately, that sort of, that bodes well for the student.
So talk a little bit more about that. So here we are in northeast Minnesota, northwest Wisconsin, where it isn't really considered diverse at all. How diversity and inclusion are really assets. Can you talk more about that? Hello?
I'm here.
Okay.
There are so many things. You know, let's start with just the general mindset. You know, when you have a student or when you have kids, and of course, I say this because I can relate this in terms that I experienced myself in Duluth, that when you have kids and when you can go someplace with your child and your child can see people of color in leadership roles, they can see them as teachers, they can see them as lawyers, they can see them as doctors. Our mayor is African-American. We have a number of judges that are African-American. You know, when you see that as a kid, it changes your whole entire mindset as far as what you think you can do when you grow up. And so then you get older and you realize that, you know, hey, to be a business owner, I may actually have a chance here because there's other business owners. I don't feel like I'm paving a new road that no one else has paved before. And that was one of the biggest things that I noticed both as a parent and as a business owner moving back here, that I didn't feel like there were, I guess for the lack of a better term, the mental obstacles that a lot of times people of color have faced in the Twin Ports area. And so when I see what my stepson's trying to do, for those who remember him, you know, because we're all getting older, he's going to be a sophomore in high school next year. He has a much better sense that he's going to be able to succeed in what he wants to do because he can look around and see people already in those roles.
You're listening to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Brandon Klokey. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Henry Banks. I'm here with Brandon Klokey. Brandon joins us from Youngstown, Ohio. So we were talking about Youngstown and similar size city, very comparable to Duluth, with the exception of its ethnic diversity, right?
Correct.
That is, in Youngstown, it's about equal African heritage and Caucasian people percentage-wise, right?
Yes.
Whereas in Duluth, it's not quite so diverse.
Exactly.
If I can't say it any other way, it's just not as diverse. And demographics are changing all over the country, all over the state of Minnesota. If you were to go to Wilmer, Minnesota, Wilmer, Minnesota is very diverse. And the population, you know, is not a large population, but they have a significant number of people of color.
Correct.
Far more than Duluth has. So if demographics are changing, not only in the southern parts of the country, but in the northern parts of our country, including Minnesota, including Wisconsin, including North Dakota, South Dakota, et cetera, how do we, in your opinion, start to deal with the fact that by the year 2020 or 2030, the majority population will be people of color in this country? So here we are in a community, a region that isn't that diverse. Do you think that's going to affect us here as well?
I think it will eventually. I think, you know, compared to Youngstown, and I realize that this is a very unfair comparison when you compare Youngstown to Duluth demographically, because the numbers just aren't anywhere close to each other.
Right.
But I think the same holds true whether you're in a community the size of Wilmer, Duluth, Youngstown, Cleveland, wherever. I think the reality is the fact that we have an obligation in every one of those communities to take the time and listen and understand to who our neighbors are. I think that that is probably the single biggest thing. I don't care if my neighbor's white. I don't care if my neighbor's Hispanic. I don't care. But it is my responsibility. If I am going to be a true community member, it is my responsibility to take the time to understand who these people are. Because bottom line is, they're still my neighbor. We're still going to shop in the same grocery stores. Our kids are probably going to go to the same schools, give or take, you know, whatever. And so we have to be able to at least understand each other. If we decide in some communities where it's pretty much decided that we're just not going to have that dialogue because it doesn't concern the vast majority of the population, that's where you get yourself into trouble.
Why is that?
And I don't think it really matters the size of the community. I don't think it really matters percentages as far as, you know, Caucasian percentage to Hispanic percentage. I don't think it matters. I think that solution will always sit in listening and learning to who our neighbors are. And not only that, not basing inaccurate stereotypes and saying, well, wait a minute, I think that you might be like this, so this is how I'm going to expect you to be. And then when you don't act that way, somehow it's your responsibility to prove me wrong. Well, I don't know how society ever got that way, but in many cases, I've experienced that. I know you've experienced that personally.
Mm-hmm.
And when you mentally turn those stereotypes into what I call mythical facts, you now believe this. You now believe that this is fact. It's not based on anything that you really know. It's certainly not based on knowing your neighbor. It may be based on the fact, you know, and I hear this all the time, especially when I lived up on the Iron Range. You know, I hear things like, well, I never saw a person of color until I went to college. Well, then how do you know how I should act or how I should talk or how you think I should be towards you,
mm-hmm,
if you don't know who I am? If that is based, and, you know, and you and I have talked about this many times, even through commentaries, that if that, you know, if those mythical facts in your head are based on what you see coming out of Hollywood, based on what you see coming out of the music industry, based on, you know, some of these things that just aren't necessarily a true depiction, then we're never going to move forward as a community.
That's right. So, you know, I'm here with Brandon Klocke. He is an activist, even though he doesn't consider himself an activist, in Youngstown, Ohio. He's a former commentator here on People of Color. You know, Brandon, I want to go to Duluth, Minnesota, for example, and mention here Duluth, Minnesota, back in the year 2000, had a group of people that came together to address a horrific act that happened in 1920 in our community, that being the murders of three African heritage, African American young men who were a part of a circus that was a traveling circus that had stopped in Duluth. They were accused of raping a white woman. In the year 2000, a group of citizens came together from all walks of life, really, to address that issue. Duluth, Minnesota was the first community in the United States to do this. The memorial is the first major memorial to lynching victims in the United States. That memorial is 15 years old. And other communities across the country use that memorial as a model for what they're doing in their communities today. How did Duluth, Minnesota, a small town, do this? A predominantly white community, how did they pull this off and successfully?
You know, first of all, you know, I don't know if I don't have the answer to that. You know, other than the reality that, you know, when we talk about, you know, the majority has the loudest voice, well, when you think of the, you know, when, not that we were there, but we all now know the history of what transpired that night.
That's right.
That was the majority. That was the majority of the people there. They believed something based on what they thought they knew. Which, that's the perfect example of, hey, this is what happens if you don't really have the right information. this is how bad it can turn. You know, now, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know how that, you know, I wish I could still wrap my head around how exactly does something like this happen? How exactly do you put it on the front page of the paper the next day? But honestly, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, let me slip into my commentary role here for a second. My question, not necessarily was how did that happen, you know, way back then. I think my question of coming to Duluth in 2004 when the memorial was now becoming a real thing, I think my question was, why weren't people talking about it from the time that it happened until 2000?
Good question.
And so, you know, that's a lot of years. That's a lot of history in Duluth. Why wasn't it talked about in the meantime?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, you know, to me, that is perhaps, you know, and let me back up. Now, I do understand that people did talk about it, and there were people that knew about it, but it wasn't a mainstream story in Duluth for however many decades. You know, and so I questioned how that happened more so than what transpired that night.
Interesting.
What was it, something that was supposed to be a secret? Was it something that, you know, if nobody knows of history, then history can't necessarily repeat itself.
Well, it was a well-kept, it was a well-kept secret.
Correct. You know, and so I think, you know, like I said, I wasn't there other than, you know, perhaps a generic explanation of, you know, the power in numbers, because we saw exactly what happened when that many people storm a jail. We saw what happened. It was a horrible, tragic, ridiculous thing to have happen. But like I said, I think more so, if people couldn't answer the questions of exactly what happened that night and how it happened, why it wasn't discussed over the decades that followed.
Well, you know, to be quite honest, the community didn't have to talk about it if they
Correct.
Didn't want to.
Correct.
But the African Heritage community had to talk about it.
And the reality is, you know, Duluth isn't, you know this as well as anyone, because you're probably the most educated person on this that I know, is that Duluth isn't the only community that something like that happened.
Right.
It happened in other communities as well. And perhaps was kept just as much of a secret there, too.
Absolutely right.
Because it didn't have to be talked about. Why? Because it didn't necessarily affect us today. So if we don't want to talk about it, we don't.
You're listening to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Brandon Klokey. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Youngstown, Ohio, a former commentator on People of Color. He served us quite well when he was in the Twin Ports, very well known while in the Twin Ports, and we thank him for being a commentator on People of Color. But I just need you to focus a little bit more now, Brandon, on what you're going to be doing in Youngstown, Ohio, once you have really settled in. And I know you've been there. How many years now have you been back there?
I actually started going back and forth 3 years ago. My family moved here two years ago, the beginning of this past July. So it's been about 25 months now.
So it's about time for you to get involved again, isn't it?
You know, I have because I just don't know how to keep my hands out of stuff. I have talked with some political people here. Really to get a feel for even the differences of how political things are done here. Because point blank, political things are done different here than they are in northern Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I made a promise to my wife that I was not going to do this, at least until our youngest graduated from high school.
Okay. okay. That's 2 years. You got two more years.
Right. Some of that groundwork has been looked at, and I honestly don't know if it's something that I want to pursue, because the reality was when I first started pursuing politics in Minnesota was when I ran for mayor up on the Iron Range back in 1998. And of course I lost, but you know, so this was a number of years ago now. Well, I'm older, I'm slower. So, you know, I have to be a little more careful about what I pick, but certainly if I don't run for office, I will be politically active. That is not a secret. Those of you who knew me in the Duluth area know that that's just part of my blood.
Oh, it is definitely part of your blood.
It's just part of my blood. I will return to those circles in some way, shape, or form. I can't say whether it's going to be as a candidate, whether it'll be just outdoor knocking and doing the same things that I did up there. I don't know yet. But right now, we decided that we're going to focus on our businesses and my design practice, which I did while I was up in Duluth. And so right now, we're just going to focus on that and go from there.
And so for listeners who are hearing this conversation, some may remember you, some are just learning about you. Talk a bit about your design company and what you do.
I design homes. The nice thing about it is because channels like, you know, Home and Garden TV and all this show all of this technology. You know, they show the 3D animation, they show all of these things. And for a long time, people, you know, you couldn't go to a design firm and be able to get those services. And I was very fortunate many years ago to be kind of on the front edge of computer design, you know, computer-aided design and computer animation. And I've always done that. That's always been an interest for me. And that's really been the anchor behind my design firm.
Interesting.
You know, that we're able to show, you know, we're able to walk people through homes. We can show them every single detail that they want to see. And they absolutely love the ability to be able to do that. Like I said, channels like Home and Garden TV have single-handedly probably saved my practice because people see that. And they're like, I want to see my house on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come to us, and we are, even in Youngstown, we are really the only home design firm that specializes in the 3D things from the very first stages of design. So we're doing well here.
That is really good news that you're doing well, a person of color owned business and thriving.
We are. And that was something that I honestly could never say that this company was never really able to thrive in northern Minnesota. And I'm sure there's a number of factors for that that we certainly don't have time to get into. But it is good to finally be in a position where, hey, we are working just as hard, if not harder, as the next business owner, but we're also now finally be able to reap some of the same rewards that business owner is.
So to a business owner listening right now to people of color, and they're hearing you talk about being in business and how your business is thriving in Youngstown, Ohio, how do you do it, Brandon? How do you stay focused? What encouragement would you give to business owners of color in Northwest Wisconsin, Northeast Minnesota, those who are striving but not thriving, those who want to start a business but are afraid to start a business? What would you say to them to encourage them to make it happen?
There's two things. First, be persistent. You know, stick to your goal. If you want to become, you know, the best cupcake baker or whoever in that area, then you keep focused on that. There are a lot of people that will tell you, and I don't know if it's just the fact that you're a small business owner or you're a minority business owner. It could be a little of both. People will tell you, well, you know, so-and-so started a cupcake company and they failed. You know, which is really the polite way of saying, so you should probably stop now too. If people hear that message enough, they'll stop. They will abandon their own goals simply because people told them to. You know, and I think that goes with really any circle. But I think that's the first one. And then the second one, I think, is perhaps more important to people of color, is very simply this. You are just as valuable as your counterparts. There were a number of times that I had people approach me that for some reason they felt that I should be paid less for the same service that they would get from someone else downtown. And I struggled with that. I struggled with that because if you're a new business owner and you're struggling for business, you now are faced with the question, do I take this and accept less because at least less is more than what I have now? Or do I hold my ground and make sure that these people understand that my services, you know, my products and services are just as valuable as my counterpart in the next block? And I know that there are a lot of minority business owners that have run into similar situations like that.
So I
think that, you know, the goal for that business owner at that point is to say, look, my services and products are just as good as anybody else. Explain to me why you don't want to pay me what you would pay them.
Very good. So, you know, so Brandon, so we hear over in this part of the country, and we've heard it many times in the African heritage and other communities of color, well, we just don't have money. Everybody else seems to be getting money to start their businesses. But when it comes to people of color, especially African heritage people in this region, there always seems to be a lack of money. And a colleague of mine, Xavier Bell, I'm sure you know Xavier Bell.
Remember him well.
Always refers to there being enough for everybody. But from a system kind of standpoint, it doesn't seem as though there is enough because it certainly isn't reaching down effectively in African heritage community in the Twin Ports.
Correct.
How do we change that from your perspective? How do we really deal with that and say to the larger community, the larger population, there is enough and we want to be a part of being in that there is enough. We want some of those dollars too.
I think that comes down to the overall business community.
How so?
Because, well, first of all, the business community has to understand that when we bring people to the table, we have to bring these businesses of color to the table. First of all, we have to acknowledge them. If you don't bring these people to the table, it's pretty easy, I guess, for the lack of a better term, to play dumb and act like they're not there if you don't bring them to the table. I think that has been, in my opinion, in the business circles, I think that's been a struggle for businesses of color to even get invited to the table. So half of your business struggle is just getting people to acknowledge that you're there, let alone what you do or what you provide. It's just letting people know that you're there. I was in a number of circles and went to a number of organizations, business type organizations that, you know, when I was present, I knew people there. I was socializing with people. I would be surprised at how many of the old boys network, which you find in any town, acted like I wasn't even in the room. Yet we're not even going to bother talking to you. We're not even going to bother acknowledging you. You know, and these were significant organizations in the Duluth community that dictated a lot within the business circle. And so I think when you start talking about the money, when you start talking about enough to go around, I think it's a relative term. The people that are at the table are saying, yeah, there's enough to go around. But you're not talking to the right people. You're talking to the people that already have it.
Wow, that's real.
Invite,
that's
you
real.
Know, invite
that's
the
real.
Businesses of color. You know, invite the businesses of color to the table. And tell me if you have the same general consensus that, yeah, we all agree that there's enough to go around. You won't. But if you sit there and preach to the choir, then you're not making a conscious effort to make sure that these small minority businesses can grow, you know, relative to the same as any other business.
You're listening to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Brandon Klocke. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is Henry Banks. I'm here with Brandon Klocke. You're listening to People of Color with Henry Banks on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Brandon, I need to go back to that menu thing, right? So you have folks that come to the table. If African heritage people and other people of color are not invited to that table, they go right to becoming a part of the menu.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
How do people of color, African heritage people specifically, not be on the menu? Because a lot of times, when you see organizations that get those dollars for their organizations, those dollars are earmarked for communities of color, but communities of color are not making the decisions as to how those dollars are spent.
Correct.
Somebody else makes those decisions.
Correct.
That means people of color continue to be on the menu.
Correct.
How do we fix that? How do we make that paradigm shift, in your opinion?
I honestly, Henry, I don't know if there is one set answer. I think it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's one answer. I don't think if we say, hey, let's have a meeting and invite this person, let's just invite them all and come to a meeting.
Yeah.
Because here's what I have seen more often than not in that community is that, let's have that meeting because you know what, Henry? You know what, Brandon? You know what, Carl? You're exactly right. You know what, Xavier? You're exactly right. People of color don't come to the table, so let's bring them to the table. And really what happens is you get to the table. You and I have been in these meetings. We all sit down, and it's not really a complain session. It's an honest session.
Yes.
And yes, sadly, some of it does just come out to be this is all the 15 things wrong with Duluth, and it shouldn't be, but it sometimes happens. And so what happens is you have this big thing. Everybody has their big flip charts. Everybody has all of that. The meeting's over. Everybody goes home. Everybody goes back to their office, and not a single thing changes.
It goes on the shelf. Everything goes on the shelf.
Except we can all pat ourselves on the back and said, hey, we brought the people of color. Yay us. Look what we did as a business community. Yay us. We brought them all to the table. The process means that that's the first step. Don't do one or two things. Don't bring me to the table and patronize me and make me believe that things are now going to change. If you really have no intention of following through with the process.
So do you believe this? Do you believe this? I'm going to ask you this question real quickly. So if there is no plan, then you plan to fail. Do you believe that? No plan to fail.
Well, no. I do agree with that in concept, but I think the question comes down to, whose plan?
Mm-hmm.
Whose plan? I may have a plan. And, you know, and I've said this to adults. I've said this to my students at Edison. If you want to do something, and this sounds very stereotypical, and I just apologize to your audience in advance, but the bottom line is, if you want to do something in this community, you need their help. Because there's not enough of you to do it. You know, and I said that in reference to, like, the demographic information, because at the time, Duluth was, like, 93% Caucasian. you know, and I had, you know, and I was pointing it out to my students that if you take, you know, at the time, the total minority population of 7%, you can't do anything on your own.
That's right.
You can't change how things are taught in schools. You can't change how business is done. You can't elect people. Trust me, I ran for office. 7% isn't going to get you anywhere. No.
And I've always said that. I've always said that we as communities of color, as people of color, we cannot do this alone, nor should we attempt to do it alone.
Right. And I think that's where people really kind of get misled because and I did this. I'll be the first to admit this. I was one of those people that said, you know what? I can make a difference here. Well, in some ways, I do believe I did. In some ways, things were successful. But in other ways, and you're very aware of this, I had my butt handed to me on a plate. Because there was no way that I was going to do it by myself. And so, you know, that's where I think the community as a whole has to address the needs of your neighbor. Whether it's in a school setting, whether it's in a business setting, whether it's in an employment setting, whatever it is. My stepson was absolutely blown away when he came here and he saw a manager at Burger King who was color, who was a person of color. Because I've never seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because it's encouraged.
Right,
you know,
of course.
You know, and you know, he had never seen a black doctor. He had never seen a Turkish doctor. He had never seen people, you know, minorities in positions. Well, that's because, for one, yes, the demographics are different here. I acknowledge that. But at the same time, it was something that the community understood that this 18-year-old African-American female, we as a community will acknowledge, has just as much chance of being the valedictorian in her high school as she does being 18 and pregnant. Versus, well, she's probably just going to end up 18 and pregnant, so we're not even going to really even try to educate her the way that maybe she deserves to be or equal to her peers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and so I do. I think it's a process in any circle, whether it's business, whether it's education, but it's a process that the community has to be on board with. And ultimately, and I will be brutally honest, in some ways, especially in some of the social service circles, that was one of the reasons why we left the Duluth community. Because we realized that as a family, we can only sit here and beat our heads against the brick wall for so long before we start looking silly. And, you know, people questioned our decisions on that. People questioned, you know, from the education standpoint when I was running for office. I had a number of people tell me, well, your kids don't even go to public schools. Why are you concerned about that? I said, wait a minute. My kids do go to public schools. They go to an Edison Charter School.
Which is a public school.
Right. And the response was, well, but you should support 709. And I said, well, wait a minute. As a person of color, looking at some, you know, graduation rates and some of these other things from the school district, I said, you will be mad if I don't make the best decisions that I can for my child. Because if something happens to my child, you'll be the first one to say, well, geez, where are the parents? I said, so, yes, our children do go to a charter school, but that's the decision that we made based on what we were seeing the end result would be or perhaps could have been.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was criticized for that. And I said, well, if you were in my shoes, you may think differently than you do. And that was one of those examples where, you know, these people were saying, I don't have to look at it from your side. And in some cases, it went even further as I'm looking at it from a political side because the teachers are union and the charter schools aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, at that point, that really has nothing to do with whether my kid knows English or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, charter schools are public schools. They get public education funding.
You know, and I was criticized for that, and I know that I took a hit on Election Day for that. And I said, well, But that's the decision that I make as a parent to invest in my children's future, to set them up to where they can be as successful as I believe they possibly can.
One more question for you.
Sure.
Why, and I may have another after this, that may come may come from this question. So here we are in 2018, especially within the Twin Ports region, more specifically in Duluth, Minnesota. We have not elected one African Heritage person. Not one elected official is African Heritage in Duluth, Minnesota in 2018. Why is that? People are running for office, and they're just not making it.
I have two short answers to that. The first surface answer to that is because the community doesn't have to. Not that they shouldn't. It's because they don't have to. Clearly they don't have to, or they would have done it by now.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that there's people probably just shaking their heads going, geez, what happened to him when he went to Ohio? You know, but in reality, they don't have to. So I think that that's part of it. The other part, I think, is, again, when you don't listen to members of in your community, you miss something. You miss something. And when you've already decided that you're not going to listen to these candidates of color because of any one of five different processes, whether it's the party endorsement process or just however, you know, whatever you want to categorize it as, if you've already decided that this person is not worth listening to, and therefore I don't have to listen to them, then I think you've done yourself a disservice. Because there are a lot of, even the time that I was, the 15 years that I was in Duluth, there were a number of people of color or African-American that would have been very capable, strong community leaders. But they were never given the opportunity to be heard. And I think that's why it hasn't happened.
That's it in a nutshell.
I could be wrong, but certainly, you know, we don't have enough time now, but you know of situations where it was a different game when there was a person of color involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's part of the problem. But again, part of the solution to that is saying, hey, we're going to do this the way we should. Every candidate gets equal time, has an equal opportunity to prove themselves as a worthy candidate. And I will, and not only that, trust your community to believe who they, you know, to pick who they believe is the best candidate, not who five or six or seven people say this is the only candidate you should listen to.
That's right. That's clear and to the point. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners? I know we can talk about this for a long, long time. So my hope is that you're going to come back another time too.
I first of all, I thank you for that. Anytime. You know, there's a lot of ways that I miss Duluth. You know, there's a lot of people there who I still keep in contact with, who I very dearly miss. You know, yourself included.
Well, thank you.
Because we all fought side by side. And not just people of color, but people that I taught with, that I still keep in contact with, and they were wonderful people because they recognized the fact that this is something as a whole is a responsibility as a community,
mm-hmm.
not just one person. It's not one or two persons' job to disprove stereotypes and everything across the community. This is something that we all have to work on.
I gave a speech at. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I miss those people because whether it was through the Fathering Project or Lifehouse or the Hillside or whatever, I got to work side by side with those people, and they're the most wonderful people I've ever had the honor to work next to.
Absolutely.
Like I said, yourself included.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate that. You know, I gave a speech at the Lions Club recently, and that's pretty much how I laid it out. You know, if we're going to do anything tangible in this community, in this region, we have to do it together as a family, as brothers and sisters, really.
Right.
And that's the only way it's going to happen and be a collective kind of response to whatever it is that's going on.
I agree.
Anything else you want to leave with our listeners?
You know, like I said, you know, I miss Duluth. There's a lot of wonderful things and wonderful people that I miss there. My wife has made me do a number of times. We live about an hour from Lake Erie. She said, I miss the lake. So we've had to go up to Lake Erie just so she could see water that didn't end on the other side.
Right on.
So,
right on.
You know, we miss the Duluth community. But like I said, sadly, we felt that for the better part of our family that we needed to move on.
Thank you very much. Lake Superior, there's nothing like Lake Superior.
Very true.
Brandon Clokey, thank you very much. Brandon, a former commentator on People of Color with Henry Banks, joined me today from Youngstown, Ohio. Have a great evening and a great weekend.
Thanks, Henry.